Welcome back in. Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Remember, FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, reacting to a big Titans win against the Colts, 34-31 in overtime against the Colts. Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic just telling me how much she likes it when you and I yell at each other.
You don't do it enough.
We need to yell more. Just start yelling all the time.
We can start manufacturing some screaming matches.
We can.
I do that. By the way, speaking of that, you know, I just have to bring this up. Did you see that Jared like quote tweeted me with his little sweaty video yesterday?
Yeah. Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Shout out to Adam Vingan, who said like the only controversy is that you didn't shower before making this video. By the way, though, on that point. Now, and granted, I mean, just a horrific. Both of those turnovers.
Not good. For,
so is that, does that verify Carson Wentz sucks? Terrible signing? It's over?
I wouldn't say that. I would just say that it was reaffirmation yesterday that he is still capable of the death pick, and he threw a couple of death picks yesterday.
Well, like TD, and of course TD covered him in Philly, you know, I think hero ball is a great way to describe Wentz.
Yeah.
Like there's just some plays, and it's like Mahomes gets into that sometimes. We've made the comparison to your guy Brett Favre, you know.
Favre.
Sometimes it's just better sometimes to go ahead and sail one out of bounds or take a sack, and Wentz struggles with that. But he has this incredible knack for it's like finding a defender on some of those plays, you know? Like even the one against the Rams or the one last week, like it's just like it's like the ball is like magnetized to it to the nearest defender. I still think he's been actually pretty good this year, but hey, between injuries and then those plays, I mean, if you're a Colts fan or you're the Colts organization, you got to feel a lot less convicted today that he's your guy moving forward.
Let's go to Ben on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Two good things from yesterday. We won, and now we can focus on how good the whole team is instead of just Derrick Henry, because his trajectory towards MVP can be laid to rest. The last 2 weeks knocked him off the pace to be considered. He needed the whole 12 to 14 weeks of momentum connected to actually win the MVP. So we read off Derrick Henry's stats earlier in the game. 28 carries, 68 yards. A long of 9 yesterday. So the Colts did a great job against Derrick Henry. And as you pointed out, it was pretty clear Derrick Henry was not completely healthy yesterday as well. Do you buy what Ben has tossed out there of this has taken him way off the pace to win MVP and that now can be laid to rest?
No. I mean, Ben, no one. Go back through Jim Brown's best season, Barry Sanders' best season, Walter Payton's best season, Emmitt's, but whatever. No one does it every week. So if Derrick Henry puts up a, you know, a 200 burger on the Texans coming up, and that makes up for this one, right? So no, it doesn't end it. And the thing is, again, what is necessary? We've talked about all these different things. One thing that's necessary is the Titans having a spectacular year, you know, and now that is I can still make the case that yesterday still helped him because he's not going to come close unless he's on the one seed or something close to it in the AFC this year. You can have a huge day or two. You're going to have a few days where you don't hit 100 yards. I mean, otherwise, there'd be a lot of guys who get like 2,000 yards in this league. It's very difficult to do that. So I don't buy that. Now, I do think that based on how he looked yesterday, one – I mean, you could make a case for like a week off here or there, maybe a week off in L.A. if he's not fully himself playing an NFC game. I know it's a huge game. Look, if you want to talk MVP, Sunday Night Football, showcase, everybody watch. I mean, from that perspective, it's an opportunity. But, I just don't know how banged up he is. Is that just something where he tweaked something yesterday and by like Thursday he's going to be just fine and back to himself? I don't know. I think that's the concern. It looked yesterday like, I mean, 219 carries is what this guy has right now.
Yep.
It looked like, you know, maybe the wear of this season is starting to catch up with him. He's at 219 for 937, which means he's still, you know, almost 300 full yards ahead of Jonathan Taylor at 649 for the rushing title. Rushing title, a key component of winning the MVP two, obviously, and very, you know, three in a row is quite a rarity in the NFL.
It is. Look, it was, you know, we talked about early in the first quarter yesterday. There's the shot of Derrick Henry on the sideline. He's got a shoe off and he's walking around and the trainers are looking at him. You know, you could tell when he got up after some plays yesterday that he was walking pretty gingerly back to the huddle or back to the sideline or whatever the case may be. I guess my first reaction was, all right, yeah, he's hurt, but he's obviously not hurt enough where he can't play. So that's good news if you're the Titans. But then, you know, post-game comes around, and Derrick Henry, who is always pretty good about taking time to go talk with the media, says, you know what, I got to get some treatment. I can't talk. So no addressing the media yesterday for Derrick Henry. He was getting treatment. So I guess if you're a Titans fan, that's pretty worrisome heading into this week of not even necessarily what it means against the Rams, even though there is this idea out there that I saw yesterday on Twitter. And here we are 8 games into a season that the Rams game means nothing and just sit Derrick Henry. I don't necessarily disagree with sit Derrick Henry if he's hurt, but this idea that the Rams game means nothing to me is just stupid because there is still the overall record to take in place. But it is concerning that Derrick Henry, at least after the game yesterday, was feeling bad enough where he couldn't walk out there and talk to the media. So if I'm a Titans fan, keeping an eye on that this week for sure.
Yeah, and yeah, certainly. And Tannehill, too. I mean, Tannehill.
Yeah, he looked like, yeah.
I mean, he's walking in like, you know, barely. And then.
Look like Frankenstein walking in.
Yeah. And he took a long time to get in there after his treatment. And that might be the most, you know, second guessable coaching decision from Vrabel yesterday. You know, dropping back with like 22 seconds left in overtime deep in your own territory, you know, especially because, of course, Nate Davis was out and, you know, Dylan Raiden's struggled. He struggled. So, you know, that your protection on the interior is way less than normal. And he got thrown to the turf hard. Actually, you could have made a case, by the way, on excessive force in football. You could have made a case there. I think we kind of got bounced onto that, but the, you know, regardless, that call got him hurt, got him. And I kind of went out of the press room too and watched him kind of walking to the bus. And yeah, very, very, yeah. Maybe it's just a stiff neck, and by Thursday, Henry and Tannehill may be feeling as good as you can feel. You know, we don't know, but my first thought was, keep an eye on that this week too. You don't want to mess around. And you're right, Robbie. Oh, this is a huge game. If you're going for the one, I mean, your margin for error is really small because the Bills' schedule looks very easy from here. Now, you have the head-to-head, but can you match their record? How important is it to get the one? I mean, it gives you a week off in the playoffs plus all your home games. I mean, it seems pretty important.
Yeah.
But then you could also make the case, you know what, if you win your division, which the Titans would have to completely fall apart to not do that, and you know you get a home game and you go and you're a good road team, maybe it's better to be careful here and there rather than go full tilt to try to get it. I don't know. It's gonna be very interesting, and it's going to be on a player-by-player basis in terms of how much are you willing to risk.
I'm glad you brought up Dylan Raiden's. Was it that play? Was it where Tannehill got sacked? I can't remember if it was that play or a different sack where Raiden's is in the game, and they snap the ball. He looks to his left. He looks back to his right, looks straight, and by that time, everyone's gone. He didn't touch anybody on the whole play.
Yeah, I think that was an earlier one. But, yeah, it was like snap, and his guys, has Tannehill wrapped up, like, instantly. So, yeah, and that's – you know, Aaron Brewer is starting to come back.
Yeah.
You know, so there's something that could help if Raiden's isn't ready. But certainly you saw the downgrade. And by the way, you're going up against Rams. Pretty good interior D lineman for those guys.
I would say
And
so.
Nate Davis is going to be in concussion protocol this week.
ESPN 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in this Sunday as Nashville SC takes on the New York Red Bulls at Nissan Stadium. Pregame starts at 2:15 and the match begins at 2:30. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation on the Titans. Get into Ryan Tannehill's day yesterday as well. What did we make of the Titans quarterback yesterday against the Colts? All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Titans quarterback Ryan Tannehill after a 34-31 win for the Titans yesterday in Indianapolis. Joe, we've not even brought up that sequence yet, which in a game full of crazy plays, that may have been the craziest of the Ryan Tannehill interception throw to Tyquan Lewis. Lewis, returning the interception, appeared to get hurt, I guess pretty significantly, on the play. Drops the ball as he's going to the ground. Anthony Firkser dives in and recovers the fumble, and then all hell breaks loose in the pile underneath him. The Colts actually came out of the pile with the ball, but Anthony Firkser, when you watch the replay, pretty clearly jumped on top of it. It was kind of awful to watch that replay, just kind of a sidebar here, because Lewis, as he goes down, the ball is loose, and like he's in the middle of the pile waving for the trainers to come over because of whatever just happened to what looked like his knee, and then, of course, he had to get carted off the field on that play. But a crazy sequence of events. Tannehill throws an interception. Lewis fumbles the ball. The Titans get it back, and then on the next play, you hit A.J. Brown for a 57-yard touchdown. What a swing that was in the game yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, that's another it is amazing that we've gone this far, but, I mean, there's so much out of this game. And that's a sequence that, you know, might bury you if the Colts turn that into 21-7 and keep sort of like extend that two-touchdown lead again. At some point, it gets difficult to come back. So, instead, you get a big break there. And there's another example, by the way. And I mean, if it was flipped around, I'm sure some Titans fans would be saying today, wait a minute. So the ball's on the ground and we came up with it. How is that not our football? Like you said, I mean, I think they actually got that one right. If you clearly see someone recover it and then there's a pile of bodies, which means he's down, then it doesn't matter what happens to the pile. I think right. Too many times officials let the pile become this, you know, this scrum for whoever can, you know, get the ball out of each other's hands.
It's like a battle for Braveheart in there.
And then, like you said, the next play, it's just that's the interesting thing about Tannehill. Wow. Tannehill is, yeah. I've been hearing that more and more lately. It's kind of weird. So it's kind of in my brain. But he did not give – we didn't get to ask about that pick. I think I understand what happened on the first pick, and it was actually pretty impressive, you know, sort of change up by the Colts defense.
Yeah, great play by Kenny Moore.
Yeah, basically on that Kenny Moore pick, you know, they fully expected him to keep going with A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown's basically acting as a clear out there for Marcus Johnson, but Kenny Moore came off him. And so it looked like Tannehill threw into like three defenders. But the thing is, but if Moore doesn't come back, that's just a tight window ball that hits Marcus Johnson in the hands. And, you know, whether he catches it or not, I don't know. But, I mean, it's fine. But Kenny Moore coming off, you know, great play by them. I don't know what happened on the second pick. It just looked to me like he was under pressure. D lineman drops his zone blitz, and he didn't see him. Yep. So that would have been terrible. But it's interesting. It's an interesting day for Tannehill because I also thought he had some of his best passes of the year last year. And especially, I mean, A.J. Brown right now, he played, I think TD said, you know, TD goes through those snaps, you know, postgame. He said he played 91% of the snaps. So doesn't look like the hammy is any kind of concern. And now it's like he's picking up again where he was last year, where you're talking about, okay, is he one of the elite receivers in the game? He looks uncoverable right now.
He did. And, you know, the 57-yarder we talked about, that was his first target of the game, first catch of the game for A.J. Brown. And he spun Xavier Rhodes around. I mean, that was, you know, Stephen Holder, your colleague at The Athletic, was pretty critical of Rhodes on that play and the tackling effort. And I don't know. I mean, I'd have to go back and watch it. But I know this. It's hard to bring A.J. Brown to the ground. And he just totally cooked Rhodes on that play and was gone after that. And it kind of felt like that was the springboard the Titans offense needed, because after that, I mean, A.J. Brown, you know, 11 targets, 10 catches, 155 yards and a touchdown, including some big catches on third down on the sideline, some big runs after the catch as well. A.J. Brown was awesome yesterday.
Yeah, there are teams, you know, again, the Rams have a pretty decent corner too. There are teams that may be more equipped to travel with him, you know, and you can bracket him and all that stuff. This is where, At some point, Julio Jones would be helpful return and be a factor. But, yeah, he looks like he's passed all his stuff and like he's now back on that march toward, okay, how many receivers are better in the game than this guy? You did bring up a point that I think is worth repeating. Like, you can't go that far into a game without getting something to him, right? Yeah. Like, you got to give him the ball. Now, granted, the Titans' first touchdown drive was just a complete smorgasbord of tight end passes. Like,
it's just beautiful.
Just amazing. Like, all of a sudden, it's like Swain, Ferks, or Pruitt, boom, all down the field. What are you going to do? You know, it's like, what? They're just throwing to the tight ends like crazy. And they scored. So I guess you can't really quibble with a drive that ends in a touchdown, right? But for the most part, yeah, I'd be trying to get him, A.J. Brown, the ball as much as possible. All of a sudden, he looks like, with Tannehill and Henry, the way they look coming out of that game, I say, all of a sudden, A.J. Brown's like the healthy dude on the offense.
Well, they went on the tight end drive. They went to Ferkser. I believe Ferkser was maybe the second guy on that drive that they went to. And I was like, okay, here we go. About to have some Anthony Ferkser show. And then I look at the final stats, and he's got one catch for 8 yards.
Yeah. It was a good catch.
Hey, Jeff Swaim, though. Everybody knows. I said this on Twitter yesterday. Everybody knows when you need a big play, you go to Jeff Swaim in the end zone. That's what the Titans did yesterday. What did you think overall of Tannehill's performance yesterday? When you factor in, as you said, some of the big throws that he made, he finishes with 3 touchdown passes through the air. A couple of big runs as well from Tannehill yesterday on some read option type plays. What'd you think overall for the Titans quarterback?
Yeah, overall, it's pretty good. And again, targeting A.J. Brown is going to be good for you. But, the thing is, so he took that next shot at the end of regulation. In fact, I thought a pretty fantastic pass by Tannehill was 3rd and 13 in overtime, rips one to A.J. Brown, but it's 11. The problem is it was 3rd and 13 because on 2nd and 10, you did the Derrick Henry thing and you lost 3. So an 11-yard completion that normally moves the sticks for you obviously does not move the sticks for you. But then, I mean, it really a lost play in this game because you had the bye, Molden, then you got – the PI, and you got the Pittman play in the middle of the field, then you have the Byard pick. But remember, you got an illegal block. It was actually a block in the back on A.J. Brown. So you're starting at the Colts 32, and then that moves you out of field goal range. And on 2nd and 20, just a really big bit of execution from Tannehill and Brown over the middle, getting you 13 yards, which then you get a couple more from Derrick Henry and Randy Bullock gets it done. So huge 2nd and 20 from the 42 out of field goal range. And again, with Tannehill, we saw him walking after the game, right? So probably wasn't feeling great at that point, hung in there and was able to make those winning plays. Overall, yeah, you don't want the picks. I think especially the second one, but you're talking 23 for 33, 265. Got sacked 3 times, 98.7 rating, had a 26 yards, like you said, a couple of those real nice little read option looks where he goes around end and he's just got all kinds of daylight. So, look, I said it and wrote it after the first win over the Colts. The difference between these teams, and remember, Ryan Poorth even is claiming now, he's not even worried about this curse, it's over. But this, I mean, to me, this is a huge difference between these teams. The Titans have the better quarterback. Obviously, that has very rarely been the case since these two became divisional rivals in 2002, and this is the third sweep of the Colts since then.
Is that read option that Tannehill keeps it on the most unstoppable play in football? I don't know that I've ever seen it not work.
I mean, the way people crash on Henry, I think there's a lot of stuff you can do off that, but yeah, I can't recall. They don't do it a lot, and obviously if you do it more, then at some point, you know, maybe teams adjust a little bit, but when you use it as sparingly as they do, I haven't seen it not work.
Ryan Tannehill's got some wheels, man. That's what we've learned.
I mean, that was the only good play they had against the Packers last year, right?
There's that. We'll continue the conversation on the Titans when we come back. Take more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Get into this 3-game stretch for the Titans. How long has it been since the Titans have had a stretch as impressive as the last three games? We'll get to that coming up next. Join Stars for this year's Cherish the Night Unplugged event this Wednesday at Marathon Music Works. This year's lineup is incredible, featuring Gordon Kennedy, Charles Esten, and Danny Flowers, with a special presentation of the Troy Gentry Compassion Award to the Young Fables. To learn more and to register, go to starsnashville.org. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Kevin Byard, Titans safety, after the big win for the Titans against the Colts yesterday. Big interception by Kevin Byard in overtime. Joe Rexford, I'm glad he pointed out, gave love to Randy Bullock. I was on the pregame show yesterday with Chris Sanders and Mark Howard, and one of the things we talked about, we got like an hour and 30 minutes into the show, and I was like, you guys realize that we've not talked about kicker one time? That's a nice deviation from the Titans the last couple of years. Randy Bullock, he's been great, man.
15 for 17, 21 for 22 on the PATs. Obviously, one of his misses was the potential he could get a nice tie. He could be 6-1-1 right now.
Oh, yeah. Watch out for those Jets. Just taking down AFC Giants all over the place.
Yeah, but he's been outstanding. I mean, I don't think that there's – like Bob, our buddy Bob on Twitter was asking earlier about, you know, the Wally Pipping Sam Ficken. I don't know why you're considering moving on from this guy until he really gives you a strong reason to do so.
Yep.
So it's the winner was, and by the way, the winner he did it's probably a good thing that they went to the left hash on that, because he definitely pushed that a bit. I didn't have a ton of room to spare, but the 46 yarder to tie was big, clutch, and right down the middle. I don't know a couple weeks ago or a few weeks ago, whenever. Yeah, at some point in the season, the Titans probably don't play it that way because they're not sure. You know, they're not sure. And even in the last few years, depending on who the kicker was, what was going on, maybe like you have to be more aggressive or you have to change how you look at a situation because you just don't know what you have at kicker. The way they played that was a team that's confident in its kicker, and that's a powerful thing. That's a good thing to have on your side.
So here they are, 3-0 in the last three-game stretch here, taking down the Bills, the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Indianapolis Colts. And Joe Rexroad, I was sitting there last night trying to figure out when is the last time in the regular season that the Titans have had a stretch that's been this impressive. And I wanted to go back to 2017 because – they did have a stretch in 2017 where they beat the Colts, the Browns, the Ravens, and the Bengals four games in a row, lost to Pittsburgh, and then turned around and beat the Colts and the Texans again to get to 8-4 on that season. Now, they did turn around right after that and lose to Arizona, San Francisco, and Los Angeles to get down to 8-7, where that set up the final game against Jacksonville on that very cold New Year's Eve night here in Nashville, Tennessee. But even that, I don't think was as impressive when you factor in the quality of opponent and the injury situation that this Titans team is dealing with. This three-game run that they've been on is the most impressive regular season run I think they've been on in a long time.
Yeah, that stretch you're talking about, that's not even close to this in my mind. In fact, the funny thing about that time period, so like the Colts had Brissett at quarterback. You know, they beat him on, I think it was Monday Night Football, right? I believe so. The Browns, yeah, those teams weren't really, none of them were all that great.
Right.
And a lot of really the discussion around those games was, what is wrong with this team's offense? After 2016, such a breakthrough year with the, what the heck did they call that? Exotic smash mouth football.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but Terry Rubisky and that offense was really, I mean, for stretches in 16 was really excellent. And I mean, Mario, they had it all working. DeMarco Murray and Mariota and a little bit of Derrick Henry in there and a little bit of Kendall Wright in there for you, you know, some Rashard Matthews. But they had to come back and make – and Mariota, to his credit, was directing these drives. But it's like, why do you need, like, to get to 17 points or 20 points to win a game? Why does it take – so there was – I think there was more, like, complaining about the offense. And is this team really that good then? And then, of course, they, like you said, they went out west and didn't, you know, terrible loss to Blaine Gabbert and the Cardinals. I mean, I guess you're probably right. That's probably the closest in the recent history of the team. But I mean, this has got to be the best three-game stretch since, I mean,
probably 08. I mean, they started 10-0 in 08.
Yeah, right. They had the huge win against Pittsburgh, right? And I don't remember all the games around that. But, yeah, I mean, if you have a great year like that, then there's some stretches in there that are really impressive. But, okay, so you're going back again. It's like last year, win the division, first time since 08. Home playoff game, first time since 08. Now you have this. I mean, there's a lot of things that they're doing now that are you're having to look back and reach back and say, when did this happen most recently?
I just want to point out, I was really trying to give Marcus Mariota some love there in that last little bit there from 2017, and you just totally shot it down. So let the record show that that was you, not me.
Now, wait, I said he made those. He did the drives. He made plays late. I remember the Bengals game, I think it was like a fourth down, like a throw to DeMarco Murray, like out of the backfield for a touchdown. I mean, like, yeah, I'm giving Mariota his credit. But, like, those offenses, that offense that year, and, of course, as we know how it played out with Rubisky and J-Rob and Malarkey, just wasn't pretty. But Marcus, you did a good job, buddy.
Yes, way to go.
Don't let Robbie tell you otherwise.
I wasn't. He did a great job. Did a great job. So, obviously, you know, this stretch continues. We talked going into this four-game stretch. Hey, the Titans could go 2-2. That'd be pretty good, huh? And now here they sit 3-0 with an opportunity to have the sweep coming up on Sunday against L.A. We've got a lot of time, obviously, to talk about the L.A. game coming up. But I want to go back to a point that was brought up earlier on the text line, and that is the coaching staff. What has this three-game stretch told you about Mike Vrabel and this staff when it comes to the injuries they've dealt with and the quality of competition that they have won against and, you know, quite frankly, at times – have totally destroyed. I mean, they totally outcoached Andy Reid, especially in that Kansas City game. What has this stretch told you about this coaching staff?
Well, I think that we knew Mike Vrabel was a good head coach and a good – I think that very early in his tenure here, I think he demonstrated that. And certainly he's had some late-game decisions that didn't work out, and, you know, it's never going to be perfect. But I think we knew he was a good coach. I think the question about Vrabel – has been, is he too hung up on promoting internally as a like people he slash, you know, knows slash trusts versus who's the best, you know, fired head coach who could be Dan Quinn and come in and be my DC or OC, right? And look, I mean, at some point, those choices are he's going to have more like them. And I don't think you can do it this way all the time. But I think what these weeks have demonstrated is that these coordinators seem to have an idea of what they're doing. You know, look, it's still about players making plays, but I thought that there was a lot of creativity from Shane Bowen. You know, in particular, you look at how they did things like on third downs against Kansas City, and that you have to have like a really good game plan. Those guys have issues and all that, but that's still the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Andy Reid. You got to have a good – it's not just go out and make plays. You have to have a good game plan. They did. And I think Todd Downing has had some really good weeks. Yesterday may not have been his best, but, he's had some terrific – and I thought – in fact, I think the Kansas City game was probably the showcase for both the coordinators. But overall, I'd say people should probably not worry about the coordinator – hires and feel pretty good about them and feel like, look, if it went wrong, then it would absolutely be fair game to say, okay, Vrabel, you can't keep doing this. But this also, I think, demonstrates that he kind of had an idea of what he was doing. And we know when Arthur Smith was promoted, it was the same question. Like, why is the tight ends coach your new OC? And we know how that worked out.
Yeah, all those people expecting the mid-season coordinator changes, I don't think that's going to happen at this point. I don't think it was ever going to happen, but definitely not going to happen now.
But I'm sure, at some point, like, you know, Jim Schwartz must be in the film room with Shane Bowen, little marionette. You know, he's got him on a string.
Yeah, little puppet master.
Yeah. Whenever they do well, then it's Schwartz. But when they were struggling on defense, then it wasn't Schwartz.
That's right. Join us in partnering with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Light the Night. Light the Night brings light to the darkness of cancer through hope, research, and support for patients and their families. Through this inspirational nationwide movement, we raise awareness and funding for groundbreaking research and treatment options to eliminate cancer. Nashville's Light the Night will be virtual and take place this Thursday at 7 p.m. You can learn more at lightthenight.org/TN. When we come back, it is that time of the week, time for the Rex Rant. Joe Rex Road's Rant of the Week coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for the Rex Rant here on 102.5 The Game. Joe Rex Road's Rant of the Week as he passionately sings A Little Kokomo coming back in for the break. Rex Road's favorite song today here on the program. Joe, I know this is how you wanted to start the week. Thank you, Michelle, for properly setting the tone.
I got you guys.
Good stuff. Enjoy it.
Beautiful. The absolute that and Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Yeah.
When you are getting ready for school in the morning, absolute misery. Like, it makes the entire day becomes bad because you heard those songs. So very, very excellent intro music for this segment.
Well, I hope Gentry will have a nice ride home with
yes,
you then.
I hope so too.
Well, actually, today, you know, it's a little bit different. I would call today, instead of a Rex rant, a Rex-valation.
Okay.
How about that?
All right. I like it.
So somewhere along the way this weekend, I saw like Taylor Lewan's, his weird like thing that he said at the Friday presser. Of course, yeah. I couldn't be there. I was actually in East Lansing that day. He's like, I'm not going to say the F word, but Michigan State.
Yeah.
I think he said they're going to donkey them.
Yes.
They're the little brothers, he said.
Right. The little brother thing. Right. Which, yeah, that, and boy, that was fun back in the day when Mike Hart brought that up in 07. But now I'm seeing like all the trash talk that accompanies a rivalry football game, college football. Like if you, whether you like or hate Draymond Green, if you see his presser from like the Golden State Warriors yesterday, oh my goodness. The trash talk is flowing. I saw Michigan State fans arguing this weekend. You know, the dislike, the emotional stakes of a game like that, especially an in-state rivalry, like with two good programs, with people who are family members or who are always around each other, like the stakes emotionally are like, it's incredibly high. But it's also why sports is great. I just had one of the best weekends of my life, really, other than finding out how much out-of-state tuition is at my alma mater. But, you know, that's another – that's another issue. But, you know, I saw friends I hadn't seen in a year. Like, you're talking friends from day one in the dorms of the freshman. We had a really good, like, reunion from people. Like, and I got to see one of my kids just completely lose himself in a football game and do it the right way, you know, celebrating, hugging random Michigan State fans rather than focusing on the fans of the other team. And this is a parent moment Katie and I will never forget. One of the best stadium atmospheres, games I've ever seen. I never see him from the stands normally. That was special. And considering all the world has gone through in nearly 2 years, that was a moment for me, like, you know, sports,
yep.
You know, sports is amazing. You can still in college football, I mean, you can look at all the money spent. I mean, the access, the facilities, like the resources and emotion, like from adults that are put into a bunch of 18 to 22 year old kids who beat each other up from an oblong pigskin. Okay. And you can like step back and say, man, what is this? You know, but what it is it's life memories and human connection, you know, that you can't really manufacture. And that's, I think, why we ultimately love it. So I just want to say thank you, sports, today. And also, I look forward to Taylor Lewan's humble response this week.
Yes, I'm sure it'll be very humble on the response to what looked like an awesome game. I mean, you know, I was at the Preds game on Saturday, and it was taking place, which, first off, shout out to Nick Barnowski of the Predators. I thought he was going to have a nervous breakdown throughout that entire game as that Michigan State was going on. But looked like an awesome game, an awesome environment to be a part of, and here we are yet again, Joe Rexroad. We've avoided this discussion all year long, but the Jim Harbaugh can't win a big game discussion has now come back up again and was in full force on Saturday night.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the key moments there was the freshman quarterback who's like the five-star who goes in the game and fumbles. And, you know, Michigan State, you know, that's the thing, Michigan should have won that game. Michigan was really better for most of the day, and it was this incredible comeback. But part of it was this freshman going in for his quarterback, Cade McNamara, who was having the game of his life. And then he fumbles the ball. But apparently the McNamara was banged up too. So, yes, all the Harbaugh stuff comes back. I mean, I guess, and believe me, you know, after a game like that, the Michigan State fans hang out and talk. And some Michigan fans I know are upset. And he should never be 3-4 against Michigan State right now. Being winless against Ohio State, that's fine. Like, that's a different level of, like, they are head and shoulders really above any other program in terms of talent in that league. But you can't be 3-4 against Michigan State considering their stretch here with D'Antonio ending. Like, that's unacceptable. But I would also say, if you're Michigan, like, who is definitely better than him? You know, that's kind of the bind you're in. I mean, who is definitely an upgrade over Jim Harbaugh? They have recruited well. They've still won a lot. They just haven't gotten to that next level. And then, you know, they've got probably at least one or two more losses ahead of them, I think, too, because they're not that great. But yeah, the Harbaugh stuff, it's never going to end. I think that there's some reality about that program too, that some people don't want to look at.
You mentioned the environment at the Michigan State Michigan game, which looked awesome. I've seen some videos that have come out of there as well. It looked great. What about yesterday in Indy? Some talk yesterday that the stadium was not full and that the crowd wasn't all that great for Indianapolis. You were there. You were in person. What did you think of the environment in Indy yesterday?
Well, I mean, when it was 14-0, it was pretty good. Yes, there were definitely empty sections in the uppers, for sure. There was actually a pretty strong Titans presence, too. I mean, the Titans fans showed up in Indy, and I've seen that to some extent in the past as well. But like you noticed their presence at times when the Titans made some plays. But when it was 14-0, when they had it going early, and the Titans were on offense, they were making good noise. I mean, considering that you're talking about a 3-4 football team, and in today's, I mean, the reality of filling a stadium or filling an arena, I mean, you got to be pretty special to do that anymore. You know, I didn't think it was bad at all. Now moving forward, you know, you might see some pretty drab crowds here in this place. It's just amazing the Colts are 3-5, and then they still have the games that they have ahead of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not pretty.
Joe, let's quickly go around college football over the weekend. This will probably be the one time today we've got a chance to do it, so let's go ahead and get it done. Georgia and Florida. Georgia, a 34-7 win against the Gators. That defense is just absolutely suffocating, and that was probably the last real chance, at least in my opinion, that Georgia has to go down before the SEC title game this year, and looks like Georgia's going to go undefeated in the regular season.
Yeah, I know that game was competitive, and then it wasn't. You know, it's not like it was just a complete domination from the start, but boy, 34-7. And speaking of, you know, fan bases unhappy with coaches, it doesn't take long. I think, especially in this league,
yeah.
And Florida fans not super thrilled with Dan Mullen, which I understand.
I heard the term Butch Jones get thrown around when it came to Dan Mullen. What do you think of that?
Yeah. Maybe a little bit much there. That might be a little bit much. But, yeah, they're the best team. I very much look forward to Alabama, Georgia. I mean, I think that's the best two. But, man, they are something else. They are something special, that defense. It's one of the best we've seen in the last many years.
Ohio State takes down Penn State, 33-24, the final in the Big Ten. So a big day in the Big Ten. You had Ohio State winning, Michigan State taking down the Wolverines. What do you think right now of the Big Ten, and has Ohio State gotten to the point, even with their early season loss to Oregon, where they are pretty clearly the best team in the Big Ten, in your opinion?
Yes, although I was impressed with Penn State. Penn State had a chance to win in that game. And, I mean, Sean Clifford, you know, throws for 361 in that game. I mean, there were some big plays that swung that game, but I thought Penn State hung in with them play after play. Penn State has – I mean, honestly, I think that's probably the two most talented teams in the Big Ten, all due respect to Michigan and Michigan State. But, yeah, Ohio State's the best team, and they're in position here to recover, you know, from the Oregon loss and be fine and get in. You know, the year that they won it under Urban Meyer, they lost an early one, a stunner at home to Virginia Tech, and recover from that. We're fine. I think they're going to win it. I do. I will say that they didn't look as overwhelming as I thought they might. And I still think that they're a flawed team. I still would put them a clear, you know, step behind like Alabama and maybe two behind Georgia, but we'll see. They've got a lot of guys, and CJ Stroud he's pretty good.
Very quickly in the SEC, Auburn takes down the Lane Train 31-20. They win against Ole Miss. Mississippi State takes down Kentucky 31-17, a win for the Bulldogs. Obviously, we've talked a little bit about the Mississippi State win. Auburn, to me, is a very confusing team. You don't know what exactly you're going to get out of them on a week-to-week basis, but a big win against Ole Miss on Saturday for the Tigers.
Yeah, well, like I said earlier, like, why aren't we ever talking about, like, the job, you know, that Mike Leach is doing, you know, at Mississippi State? Maybe we should start noticing that. I mean, you look at Auburn. I mean, you know, going to Arkansas, which was the darling of the SEC, and taking it to them. Now this win, holding that team to 20. I mean, they lost a really hard-fought game at Penn State early in the year. They didn't look great at all times. Like, the win at LSU was kind of ugly. You know, they got thumped by Georgia. But other than that, that's it. I'd say Brian Harsin has done pretty well. And how about that D coordinator, Derek Mason?
That's right.
You come out of a game like that with that offense and that quarterback, and you hold them to 20 points, you had a pretty good weekend.
Listen to the MLB postseason on ESPN 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9, brought to you by 312 Pizza Company. 312 Pizza Company in Germantown is home to the best pizza in Nashville. Head to 312 Pizza Company to grab a bite, a beer, and watch some October baseball. When we come back, we'll be joined by our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2 to talk Titans and Colts. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.